Hello to everyone and welcome to this episode of Solo Voices. Today we are in company of a band that is coming from the port of Toronto, Prestkang Mutiny. I've been roaring out songs of the sea since 2013, keeping alive the powerful tradition of maritime work songs. And well, the world's first truly multicultural music. Their latest release, All Away Joy, is already on air on Formula Indie and during the music chart as well, and brings new life to an Odyssey shanty, blending the ethos of the Clancy Brothers and Lead Belly with a modern production twist. It's a tribute to the roots of folk music and a bold step toward its future. Now let's sail with Prestkang Mutiny and explore this story behind this track. First of all, welcome. How are you guys?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Prestkang Mutiny have been together for over a decade right now. We are in 2025, so 12 years. How was your relationship with the music and each other evolved in that time? And you was a friend before this... The band, or you teamed up?
Yeah, James can tell you the story of the beginning of the band, and then I joined a little bit later on, sort of through luck. But James, why don't you talk about how things got started?
Sure. Well, I was going to joke that we were friends before, but not anymore. But no, that's not. So the origin story of Prestkang Mutiny, it came out of a tour that I did with another band that I still play with called Lemon Bucket Orchestra. And that's kind of like a big Eastern European, kind of Balkan, Ukrainian kind of band. And so we'd done a big tour over in Europe in the summer of 2013. And when kind of midway through that tour, I sort of decided I'd like to start a sea shanty group. So the formation of the group, of our group, was sort of based on a lot of members from Lemon Bucket Orchestra as well. And then Richard, who's not on the call, is an old high school friend of mine. He kind of came into the group shortly afterwards. And the band's kind of evolved over the last 12 years now. We've had different members sort of come through the band and different members sort of, going off to do different things as well. And I'd say in terms of the music, I mean, 12 years ago, I think we were just really kind of eager to learn about sea shanties, and it was sort of a very exciting time to, do a lot of research and learn as much as we could. And then after, over the years, we've sort of realized certain things that we believed were not necessarily true. And we've sort of, discovered many more things through our podcast, The Shanty Show, that we've been doing for, about 5 years now, I'd say. And so it's sort of been a very interesting journey of being absolute beginners to now. It's sort of interesting, some of our arrangements, some of our song selections, we're hearing different shanty groups doing as well. So it's been kind of an interesting journey to learn as much as we could, and then to sort of inadvertently be influencing and teaching other people who are interested in this style of music too. So it's been a really interesting journey.
And as a band from Toronto, how does the city's cultural diversity influence your approach to folk and maritime music?
Good question. I can speak to this a bit. I don't know, Stefan, if you want to jump in as well.
Go on, James.
But I mean, Toronto, it's a really interesting place for many reasons. I mean, I've heard it say many times, it's the most multicultural place in the world. It's certainly the most multicultural place in North America. I think Miami might be the second most. So I think one of the sort of results of that is we're just surrounded by incredible music from every conceivable corner of the world. I think that's a really wonderful thing. It's, without even trying, you're exposed to so many different concepts and influences. I was fortunate to go to university for music and to study ethnomusicology. So, what better place to do it than Toronto? And we've got a lot of really incredible music venues as well. For example, Drome Taberna springs to mind, where they've got, a wide range of music every single day, about four different band or performance programming per day. So I say it's an incredible place musically. How it affects folk and maritime music, that might be a bit more obscure. I don't know, Stefan, if you want to jump in and.
Well, I think the best way to talk about it is probably through the lens of this new album that we've just, well, we will be releasing in March, and the first single, Holloway Joe, was released back in September. And our approach with that album, you know, our first two albums were very traditional. And in the world of sea shanties, what that typically means is you're just using voices, because these were work songs that were performed on ships. And so the sailors would be using their hands. So they're not, you know, doing any instrumentation. So the first two albums were very traditional in that vein. But as we started to learn more about sea shanties, we realized that there's a lot of connections to other musical forms, particularly some of the black music of the Caribbean and the southern United States. And so we wanted to explore that with this new album. And one of the things that was that made that much easier for us to do, and I think much more enjoyable, is we have access in Toronto to musicians who are deeply grounded in their own musical traditions. So some great reggae players, for example. We've got, you know, a hip-hop artist, Matt Somber, joins us on this, and that was what he grew up doing. So we, in a city like Toronto, you know, James would sometimes come into a recording session and say, hey, I was at a concert last night, and I got to talking to the drummer, and he's going to come in and do a piece with us on, you know, this next track. So a big part of the influence, I think, for us and the impact of living in such a multicultural city has just been access and influence from all different musical genres, and us trying to say, well, how could this connect to sea shanties, or what would it sound like if we brought in that flavor? And I don't think we would have had the opportunity to do that in quite such a fun and productive way if we were living in a less multicultural environment.
Yeah, I would even add, like, if we were based in Montreal or Vancouver, we wouldn't have that same access or that same variety and diversity. So, I mean, Toronto is a really unique place within Canada and within the world.
And that I can also recognize while listening to Holloway Joe, because I can feel a multicultural blending. I don't know, like, to explain very good, but well, listening the song, you will recognize that too. And you toured widely across Canada, US, and Europe as well. What's been your most memorable performance or audience reaction so far?
If I can sort of touch on the last point, just one last thing that came to mind just there at the end. You know, growing up in Toronto, I was interested in fiddle music from a pretty early age. And there are sort of, you know, venues or sessions where you can play fiddle music, or that happens on a regular basis in Toronto. But it's not really popular music. So even as a teenager, that was kind of what I did for my own enjoyment. But when it came to talking with my friends, you know, that wasn't really something cool that I wanted to share with necessarily. So I had to kind of, you know, connect with other music that was happening at the time. So to sort of touch on your question that you asked previously, I think it's interesting that there are so many, we're exposed to so many styles of music nowadays and in this era too. And, you know, that would have been different if I'd grown up 100 or 200 years ago in a smaller place where you're exposed to only the music that's happening there. But, you know, in a big cosmopolitan city, and with the internet, you're exposed to so many different kinds of styles of music as well. So I think a lot of a lot of it sort of runs in parallel to each other, if that makes sense.
So go on, James. What are some of your biggest musical memories or experiences from Press Gang then?
For Press Gang, yeah. I'm not too sure about this one. I mean, I think in the earlier days of Press Gang, when we got to go out to the East Coast of Canada, some of the highlights for me were, you know, performing with the Yarmouth Shantymen out of Nova Scotia, and Before the Mast in New Brunswick, and, you know, performing at the Maritime Museum of the Atlantic in Halifax. I think to get that initial recognition in the early stage of the band, that's something that comes to mind as something that felt really sort of special at the time. But Stefan, you add to that.
Yeah, I've got three, and I'll try to be quick with them. You know, we've been lucky enough to travel a lot with this music, sometimes to go and perform, but also sometimes to learn. And we spent some time in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, where some of these songs came from, where in fact the last living singer who used these songs for work was still living. And we got to the very end of that, perform in the town of Barrily, in some schools and do workshops with the school kids, and to get to, you know, showcase for them part of their cultural heritage that some of them had, you know, lost touch with a little bit, was really an impactful and powerful experience. The second one that comes to mind is a couple summers ago when we were over in Europe, we performed in Poland at a festival in a town called Tychy. And the Polish sea shanty scene is incredible. There's just a really growing and evolving tradition that they've sort of taken sea shanties and really made it their own. And I think for me, anytime we get exposure to artists who are kind of within the sea shanty tradition but doing things in a different way, it's really eye-opening. And so that was a big one. But I think the most recent big one for me that I just adored, you know, when we were working on this album, because it is, you know, it's called Departure, and for us sonically it is a departure from what we've been doing before, there's always been this question of how will we translate it to the stage. And James has had a pretty consistent vision for you know, making sure that we can take sea shanties and put them on a big stage in a way that is, you know, going to be a show that an audience who may not even be familiar with sea shanties and is just there to have, you know, a good party time, that they can really get behind. And I think we really experienced that this summer, playing at a festival outside of Quebec City in a place called Saint-Jean-Port-Joli. And it was, for me, the first time that it really clicked for us, the four of us on stage singing songs, bringing in instrumentation, with our friend DJ Chaotic Vibrance at the side, you know, layering in production and beats. And it just felt like everything really clicked and the audience really responded well. So that is a really special moment for me that I'm going to treasure for a long time.
Thank you. Now I'm very curious about, you are not a sailors, no? And what is the, first of all, I would like to know if these sea shanty things, sea shanty songs are still chanted, you know, in the nowadays on the boat and things. And what is your relationship with those people right now? Is if the sailors nowadays like forgot that or are still maintaining the legacy, always the thing?
That's a great question. So I did used to sail quite a lot, quite extensively, on tall ships. You know, Toronto is right on Lake Ontario, which is one of the Great Lakes, which are effectively inland seas. You know, you can sail for days and not see sight of land once you get up into the upper lakes. And when I was sailing, we did sing the shanties on the ship. It was part of, you know, I grew up singing these songs with my family and friends, you know, in pubs as just part of folk music generally. But on the boats, we really focused on the sea shanties, but we rarely used them for work on the boats. We would use them just socially. And I think that's probably where, you know, most sailors kind of, how they approach sea shanties is basically, I would characterize it as you kind of got, you know, two camps. You've got the people who are sailing boats and who are into everything maritime, and sea shanties are part of that, and they want to sing the songs. Da, da, da. And then you've got the folks who are sailing perhaps professionally, and sea shanties are for them sometimes a little bit sort of like this, like, archaic, weird, why on earth would we do that sort of thing? So it's a really, you know, mixed bag. If you run into a sailor, they'll either love shanties or hate them and be slightly embarrassed. But so they're not used that much anymore, because obviously the technology of sailing and the work that's done on the ships has just evolved and changed so much. At their origin, these songs were used to coordinate work, and it was heavy work. And, you know, people will probably have some familiarity with railroad songs, with prison songs. Shanties kind of have connections to those. These were songs that were done to coordinate work. And if that work changes, because, for example, you now have a steamship instead of a clipper ship that operates on the power of the wind, then you don't need the shanties anymore. Or if you have a large engine and you can't hear the singing anyway, you're not going to sing these songs. So there's not so much a tight connection anymore between sailing and shanties. But I think it's really important for anyone who's singing these songs to understand that that's where they come from, and to have that inform how they present the songs themselves.
And I would like to ask, how did your personal experience shape your music and worldview?
I mean, I would say for me, music's been a really interesting journey, and it continues to be. It's a journey of exploration. So, I mean, from an early age, as I was mentioning, I was really drawn to fiddle music. So the music of, you know, traditional music of Ireland and Scotland and places like Cape Breton and Quebec in Canada. And then through doing that sort of that learning, then I was, you know, then I started to learn about the folk song tradition. So at an early age, I would have heard bands like the Clancy Brothers and the Dubliners. And it was kind of interesting because through that, I heard them doing some versions of shanties. And, you know, initially I didn't recognize that this comes from a different tradition. I just thought this is part of the Irish singing sort of tradition and canon. There's a case to be made that there are connections there for sure. But, you know, it's been interesting. The more we sort of did interviews and did research, the more we're realizing, well, these do actually kind of come from different places. But, you know, it's sort of interesting to continue to explore and to try to find those links of why do these styles of music go together? Why do they go together musically? Why do they go together, you know, historically or culturally, or even just in the sort of psyche of a culture as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, I don't know if that answered your question at all, but I think my personal experiences as sort of someone who's interested and curious about music and culture and how the two interact. Yeah, that continues to be something that sort of gives me a lot of purpose in life. To explore and to try to understand the world, to try to understand history a little better, and to try to understand my place in the world as well, you know, musically and otherwise.
You know, James touched there on, you know, shanties having these really interesting aspects, because to deeply understand them, you have to understand them sort of as a work technology. You have to understand them geographically. You have to understand them in a historical context. You have to understand them in a cultural context. But I love that James mentions the emotional context as well, because, you know, I grew up, as I mentioned earlier, you know, singing in a social way. Music was something that wasn't just a performance. It was something that we did together. And, you know, singing together continues for me to be like my happy place. And it's, you can't really be in an argument or a fight with somebody when you're singing with them. And for me, that really informs, I think, a lot of what I love about getting to do this music, is if we can get the audience singing, there's no better feeling in the world for me. And I really think that, you know, we need more of those opportunities to kind of create together and be in the process of creating something and connecting through that at a very sort of, you know, local and micro level. And that really informs a lot of how I try to go through my life, is like find those moments where we can kind of put aside bigger disagreements and just connect. And oftentimes, you know, art generally, but singing in particular, I think that just has that real effect. So the more we can put that into the world, the better off we all will be.
And what emotions do you aim to convey through your music?
Yeah, good question. I mean, yeah, as Stefan was sort of talking about there too, that there is an emotional component to shanties, and I think a lot of these guys that would have been singing these songs traditionally, they were away from home for a long time, and that means you're away from, you know, everyone you know. There's an element of sort of danger as well that's reflected in some of these shanties. Like, you don't know if you're gonna be able to round Cape Horn or not. Are you gonna have a horrible, you know, watery, freezing cold death, or are you going to make it to the coast of Chile where you're going to make it to the taverns and all that, and everything's going to be good? So there's this sort of emotional component there. There's also that sort of camaraderie that the guys on either side of you, if things get bad, these guys can potentially save your life, you know, and you can potentially save their life too. So there's a sort of element of working together, and not just working together, but sort of watching out for each other. There's a sense of sort of community. So there's this whole like sort of emotional, I think there's like a bunch of layers there that are sort of hard to explain in a sort of rational way. But to me, it feels that sentiment comes through in certain shanties more than others. So you can kind of feel that human emotion that someone might have felt, you know, 150 years ago or so.
And what's the biggest lesson music has taught you?
I didn't quite catch that. I'm sorry. What was that?
I mean, what is the biggest lesson that the music has give to you?
Oh, I say, you know, the music is it's a way to connect people. It really is. You can hear something. For example, when I was going through university, I got very interested in flamenco guitar at one point. And, you know, then I'd hear these incredible flamenco singers. And at the time, I mean, my Spanish is still not very good, but at the time, I, you know, no Spanish comprehension, but I can understand the emotion. I can understand the intensity. I could understand, you know, many different things that were being communicated. And I think music really is that international language. I think with shanties too, it's very true in the sense that these songs, you know, they're structured as a call and answer song. So the lead shanty man sings a line, and whatever the shanty man is singing, he can improvise lyrics or borrow lyrics from other songs or other anything really, somewhere you can make them up. But the crew is singing a pretty standard part with not very many lyrics, and there's a reason for that. Part of the function of that is that people from all over the world, and if you look at sailing crews in the, you know, the 1800s or so, it was the most multicultural grouping of people that the world had ever seen at the time, that had never really existed to that extent before. And so you had people from all over the place that didn't necessarily speak the same, you know, mother tongue. So it was a way to sort of connect and unify people really, really quickly. So to me, I think that, you know, the example of the shanties is sort of like a smaller example of what music is in general. And I think music really brings people together. Music, it just unites people, and it's a very powerful thing.
I love this question about what has music taught you. And I've been thinking about a journey that we've been on, or at least I've been on personally lately, that, you know, this new album and the process of going through it, I think really reinforced for me. You know, James and I are both admirers of the music producer Rick Rubin, and he has this thing that he says, you know, in creating, inspiration comes first, the artist comes second, and the audience comes last. And I always found that a little bit challenging. I think, you know, a lot of us, you know, certainly the case for me, you know, I have a need to try to get people to like me, or anything I do, I want them to like it and to accept it. And with this album in particular, we had to accept that there are going to be traditionalists who think sea shanties need to be done a certain way, who are not going to like this album because of how we are pushing beyond that and trying to showcase shanties in a different way. So it was pushing for me this sort of, you know, I had to reconcile this idea of I really believe in what we're doing and putting it out there and being okay with the fact that not everybody's going to like it. And there's going to be people who love it. Don't get me wrong. We're really proud of what we've done. But that's a life lesson for me that I think you only, again, can, or at least it really got reinforced for me through this project and through music and art, this idea that, like, you know, music, you have to be true to it. You have to be true to the inspiration. You have to be true to what you're trying to say. And everything else, you know, the audience exception, et cetera, like, that's all out of your control. Stay, you know, in control of what you need to express. And that's what music's done for me.
And now I have another question, that is, what is a dream venue or festival you'd love to play at, or maybe you already play at your dream festival?
I know what James's answer is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, we're always happy to perform everywhere we can, you know, including, in many cases, especially smaller kind of venues and intimate places. But for me, as Stefan is alluding to, I would absolutely love to be on stage at Glastonbury Festival. That to me would be like just the tops right there.
Yeah, I think that's bang on. We're gonna spend some time in the UK in August, and we can't announce anything yet. But a few really great festivals that I'm personally super excited to play at. They've been bucket list for a long time. But yeah, I have to say, James, if we hit Glastonbury, we can die happy.
And now I'll go back a little bit on the sea shanty stories. Sea shanties were originally work songs that brought people together. How do you see that spirit reflected in today's world, if you see that in today's world?
Well, it is interesting to me that, you know, during the pandemic where we're all very isolated and it was a very strange and kind of frightening time for a lot of people, it was a very something that nobody could kind of relate to. It was interesting to see that the Wellerman kind of became this smash hit. And I'm going to put my nerdy sort of professor hat on here and say, like, although it's not technically a shanty, it was the song that that gave everyone sort of the sense of connection. And it was this, lyrically it's the song about waiting for supplies to come and sort of hoping for a better experience, which I think a lot of people could understand that from the experiences that they were going through the pandemic. But I think, again, to me, the shanties, it has this emotional quality of, you know, even though you're going through a tough time, it's going to be okay. And that you're in this together with other people. So it was kind of interesting to see with the whole TikTok trend and everyone sort of layering, harmonies. And to me, that was really interesting too. It's sort of like, we're living in a very digital world. And of course that TikTok shanty trend could not have happened without the digital mediums that are available to us. But it was interesting to see people gravitating to a very human expression of just singing together, you know. And in a similar way, I'm finding it very funny. You know, my dad's a photographer, and he's always done traditional, you know, black and white photography and film photography. And a lot of younger people are dissatisfied with how good the photos are that their phones are taking, which to me is absolutely crazy. And a lot of younger people are looking to a more analog medium, and they're, you know, enjoying these sort of grainy, poorly lit photos that I'm seeing all over the place. But it's interesting. It's like the more we advance technologically, there seems to be a trend to understand the humanity and you know, and I think we're going to actually continue to see a lot more of this as we wade into this sort of unknown AI world as well.
And if you could collaborate with any artist, past or present, who would be and why?
Ooh, James is going to have a more expansive answer than me, I think. But if I would sort of put my dream collaborators here, there was a group in the late 1960s based out of the UK, and they did three-part a cappella harmony. And they've just brought this incredible energy and crunchiness. It was like, I don't even know how to describe it. It was gutsy. It was kind of, it was punk, but it was just three voices. They were called the Young Tradition. Within that group was a legendary English musician, Peter Bellamy, Heather Wood, and Royston Wood. So for me, I would just love to have had the opportunity to be in one of those dank, divey, cave-like folk clubs in the late 60s with, you know, just belting out a shanty or two with the Young Tradition. That would be a dream.
Yeah, I think, we've also been very fortunate to sing with, well, we sang with Heather Wood, rest her soul, who was in the Young Tradition. So, you know, through this shanty journey, we've actually got to sing with, I think, a lot of our heroes. Jim McGeehan comes to mind, of course. Tall 12, rest his soul, down in Barrely and St. Vincent of the Grenadines. So it's been really incredible to sing with a bunch of our sort of folk heroes and our shanty heroes. For me, again, with the creation of this album, one of the things that was important to me was to record it to a specific BPM, not a click track, but, you know, to create a beat. And the reason why I thought that was so important was because a lot of these songs, especially the capstan shanties, they really are rhythmic songs. They are locked into a rhythm. And by doing so, with a lot of what's going on with DJing nowadays, for example, with Serato stems, you can instantly isolate the vocal part or the beat, or you can take out elements and you can really remix a lot of stuff on the fly. So for me, this opened up this whole new possibility of, okay, this isn't just a new album that we're doing. This is something that could continue to get remixed, you know, in perpetuity. So I'm really excited to see what other DJs or producers might want to do with rearranging this music. And although that might seem kind of disconnected, I mean, really the whole point of shanties is they're very adaptable songs that they're supposed to be interpreted by whoever is interpreting it. So to me, it's kind of full circle. It goes back to the original intention of the shanties. And as kind of a side point to that, for me, what was really exciting about this project too is bringing in those other musicians, as Stefan was mentioning, like Son Ray Grennan, who's the son of, you know, Winston Grennan, who was the guy that invented the reggae one drop beat. And to hear Son Ray, he played drums on two tracks, but also when he got on the microphone and he just started improvising lyrics in more of a kind of like a dancehall kind of style, it just fits so perfectly. And so to see this natural overlap, I thought was super cool. And again, to get someone like Matt Somber to come in and do a rap verse over a shanty, again, it works so well. So for me, I think that's pretty interesting, is to find other connections with styles of music that improvise lyrics, because realistically, I've never really seen that in folk music growing up. But this is a practice that exists in other styles of music and other sort of, especially in African-derived styles of music. So to me, that's really exciting. It would be to see more of an interaction with you know, people who are well-versed with improvising lyrics and vocal melodies, and to see shanties, no pun intended, to have shanties once again become a living style of music, not just something that, you know, we learned out of a book and we feel that we need to perform it that exact way, but rather than that, to see it as this brand new sort of vibrant tradition where the shanty is really just a template and it's up to the performer to bring their own unique personal interpretation to it.
Finally, looking ahead, what's your dream to the next chapter of your musical story? And what do you hope listeners will discover about you through your journey?
One thing I would really enjoy doing is sort of travel to some of those places that were significant in the history of the sea shanties. And to sort of explore the places and, you know, connect with people from there, but especially connect with musicians and, you know, kind of use shanties again as a template for that collaboration. So that's something I would really enjoy doing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, we get a real kick out of hearing other people sing our arrangements, and so I'm hoping that this album in particular and whatever follows it, that we can start to hear other shanty bands really, you know, leaning into different ways of expressing the musical tradition. I think that's something that, you know, if that happened, James and I in our old age would sit back and go, yeah, we were a part of making that happen, and that was pretty cool. So that's what I would look forward to
in our older
age.
And what are your goals and aspiration for the future? Do you have any specific objective or project on the horizon?
Yeah, I think, go ahead, James.
Well, I was just gonna say, you know, to me, I think it's there's almost like a two-part answer to that, and one of them is I want to be as authentic to the tradition as I can be. And, you know, I think part of what Stefan and I and the rest of the group have been doing is doing that historical work. So I think I would like to continue to do that. I would like people to be able to say, yeah, Press Gang Mutiny are one of the most legit, if not, you know, the most legit shanty group historically. And they can point out all the historical anachronisms and blah, blah, blah. And on the other hand, I would like people to say, you know, they're really pushing the envelope and in some cases really annoying me. And, you know, how dare they do this with this traditional music? So to me, there's this sort of duality that I think is important to explore, is to preserve the tradition while also sort of pushing it forward and pushing the envelope a little bit and making it accessible to people that maybe don't know about the tradition, or maybe people that don't necessarily think they like traditional music, but to bring it to a wider audience to make sure this music sort of carries on for forever, for as long as it can.
And would you like to present your last single, All the Way Joe?
Sure, Stefan, you want to do that?
Yeah, sure, happy to. So our first single off the new album, Departure, is Holloway Joe. And it features samples by the legendary blues guitarist Lead Belly, who performed sea shanties. And so we've sampled some of that. We've sampled some vocals from the Clancy brothers, who also presented this version of the song. And James came up with a new lead melody for it. And it's just got a great ripping rhythm. We're really pleased with it.
Thank you very much for your time. You guys can follow the Press Gang Mutiny on their website, pressgangmutiny.com, on Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Bandcamp, X, on some port or on some boat. And also live on, well, tonight on Brampton.
Yeah, the Brampton Folk Club.
Yeah, well, this recording will go later, but maybe in the future for January on another Bloody Folk Club on downtown Toronto, Canada, and 29 March on Cuckoo's Nest Folk Club in London, Canada. And obviously, you can follow them and they will share with you all the news and all the lives. Thank you so much, guys.
Alexander, thank you. This was great.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
When I was a little boy, and so my mother told me to me, "Way, Holloway, way, Holloway, Joe." That if I did not kiss the girls, my lips would all grow moldy to me. Church in town.